Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
Boogie woogie baby, who's that girl with the chic shoulder pads? Could it be that long ago? No siree, bapoori, akisaki, she isn't anyone I know.
Hey, y'all, time to grab some snacks and listen to Mocha with me, Bobby Rivers. Mocha, M-O-C-H-A-A, stands for Man of a Certain Hue and Age. That is what I am, proud to be so. And today, in this episode, I want to talk about sex, race, power, and movies. And of course, I could not do this without the festive, the fierce, the fabulous Keith Price.
Hello, darling. Hello, my darling. I'm sorry I'm sounding a little like Lauren Bacall, but I believe it's the allergies that are taking me away.
Oh, my gosh. Hurry back. Yes, it sounds
Who's
like you're doing applause
girl?
In a revival.
Who's that girl? The open top pump and a snocking with a seam. Wind her up and she really could pop.
Move, Yakisaki.
Wait, I got
it. Now, for you youngins who don't know what we're singing, those are show tunes from the Broadway musical Applause,
yes.
Which was the Broadway musical based on the classic film All About Eve.
Yes.
With Lauren Bacall reviving her career as Margot Channing.
Margot Channing, 1970. She did win the Tony Award for Best Actress in a Musical. Also noted that night, the evening of, I believe it was the opening night, standing behind Donald Pippen, who was conducting the orchestra. The story goes, Ethel Merman is sitting behind Donald Pippen. She says to him when she comes out to do... And she starts that damn, I feel half teal water, half Austin. Partly Jane Fonda and partly Jane
partly
Austen.
Jane Austen, but alive. But alive.
And you can hear Ethel Merman going, Jesus Christ. Thank you, Seth Medetsky.
Now, did she win the Tony that year? Or
yes, she did.
Was that she did?
Yes,
she did.
Mm-hmm. That was the first Tony. Second Tony for Woman of the Year, I think, in '83. But I'm just going off the cuff.
Okay.
Please don't quote me. I'm going off the cuff.
Okay. But Applause was the first ever tour of a Broadway show that I saw. And I was a kid in Los Angeles. And this is the power of education. First of all, embrace your school teachers, use your library cards, and embrace the fine arts. So, my English lit teacher knew that I was interested in film and theater. And she had season tickets to the Music Center in downtown LA. And she had to be out of town to visit relatives. And she said, check this out with your mom, if it's okay. I want to give you my ticket because I cannot go see the play. I'm going to be out of town. The play was Katharine Hepburn in Coco. I would have walked to the Music Center. I integrated my first Music Center audience.
Oh, my God.
Black kid in the orchestra to see Katharine Hepburn in a musical as Coco Chanel.
Screaming at the encore.
Oh, clever mademoiselle.
So basically, you've gone to two musicals with terrible lead singers. Ooh, honey.
Okay, now before I get started on our topics here, it is a sin and a shame that you got these two black men who can talk about classic Broadway We embrace the arts. We're grateful to our school teachers. We have library cards, but we ain't got jobs. Somebody offer us something.
Welcome to New York, how may I help you? Welcome
to New York. Oh. All right. Big news again in the Time's Up category. Women have had it. The latest man to get evicted from the Big Brother household. Les Moonves.
I mean, it's hard to not laugh, but I can't help it anymore because really?
Really?
Like, okay. Now you now, too. Like, geez Louise, man, what is going on?
What is going on? Now, like over a dozen women have hurled accusations at him. Mr. Moonves, from last I heard, still claims that, you know what, they're not true, but I'm going to donate $20 million to Time's Up. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, thanks. Right. Now.
That sounds like Mama Julie Chen made him do that. I'm just saying.
We're just saying. Now, I want to talk about a couple of women in this episode. Two fine actresses. One is an Oscar winner. One is not, but should be. I want to talk about Ileana Douglas, love and I want to talk her. About Viola Davis.
Love all right. Her.
For those of you who are into classic films, let me tell you this. She is from a Hollywood family. Her grandfather was the late, great Melvin Douglas, terrific actor who was good in comedy and drama. Melvin Douglas was the leading man to Garbo, Irene Dunne, Gene Arthur, Claudette Colbert, Myrna Loy. And then and this is like the 30s and 40s. In his later years, from the 60s to like 1979, he did dramatic work and won two Oscars for Best Supporting Actor. One for HUD, a movie very special to me. The other was for the Peter Sellers movie, Being There. All right, now. Just because you're related to somebody who's won a couple of Oscars doesn't mean that you are also talented. But in this case, it is true. Ileana Douglas is a gifted actress, director, and writer, and TV host. And Ileana Douglas had been around like her grandfather in the 1940s and 50s. Directors like Preston Sturges, Howard Hawks, and Billy Wilder would have been casting her a lot. That is the caliber of her talent. Now, there was a time, because I love the way she does comedy. Love that she makes me laugh, and I always thought she would rock a sitcom. Okay? Mm-hmm. She was one of the women who talked to Ronan Farrow. Because she was one of the women, it was reported, who was sexually assaulted by Les Moonves.
No.
Yes. Not only that, because they were meeting about her doing a possible sitcom. And I believe which she would have acted in it and have done writing. And she knows like how Hollywood operates, and she's all business. And at one point, the meeting just it took an ugly turn. The next thing she knew, he's on top of her, and she's fending him off.
What?
So.
What?
What happened is, he wound up pretty much blackballing her career. There were a few years where you just didn't hear from her. Yes. Blackballed her career, and then she lost her agent and her manager. They dumped her.
Wow.
Okay. You've got to do this. Go to Google and Google the New Yorker Radio Hour. The New Yorker Radio Hour is a show in conjunction with NPR, National Public Radio. Uh-huh. And she is on that show and gives the whole story.
No.
And it is so gripping. It's gripping. And it's Ooh. Relevant. And when she gets to the point where she tells about what he did, she broke down crying. And I went, oh my God. You know, just... You've got to hear this. And you know what? And here's where I thought of you. Because you and I have talked about this. And when the Harvey Weinstein story broke, we believed the women, because when they said, I didn't speak up earlier because I was afraid of losing my job. And I went, you know what? As black men, and whenever we think that we have encountered some racial discrimination at the from the hands of white executives, and we want to speak up, but we're told, no, you know what? If you speak up, you're going to lose your job.
That's the truth.
It on that ugly, on one side of that ugly coin is the harassment and disrespect of women. On the other side, I believe, is racial inequality, which also comes from this boys' club and this toxic masculinity behavior that seems to be a virus within the entertainment industry.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And they don't seem to care. They don't seem to care. Because, you know, it's like, it's very interesting that he has managed to survive this long in that job and nobody ever say anything. Not a person.
Isn't it something?
I mean, you know, and again, don't get me wrong. It's not that we shouldn't have expected this because, I mean, you know, the times were different and people didn't say and things were different. But like, my God, as these things kind of start rolling forward, you're just like, I'm telling you, that was when Matt Lauer was sitting there bricking it during those moments as they were, it's like as he could see it coming closer and closer and closer to him, you could just watch in his face every time he had to talk, like do those stories, he was just kind of like, well.
I know his face, he looked like a deer caught in the glare of headlights.
That's just terrible how those men.
Oh my God, they did that too. But you think about it, because you have to hear Ileana's interview in that, and then you also think of Janet Jackson.
Yes. That was the one that worked my nerves. I'm going to, for the folks that are listening, I'm going to put a link in our feed down at the bottom when you're looking on the description to this thing. This is amazing. The Ileana Douglas story.
Okay. Now, with the Janet Jackson thing, apparently he had blackballed her career. Like, she was not seen on MTM. First of all, now that is a part that also infuriates me because of the racial undertones of that.
Exactly.
And this is like just the history. Back in the day, MTV was not playing the music videos of black artists. It was like, it was one of the worst kept secrets in TV because everybody was noticing they're not playing any black artists. You could even go to YouTube and there is a video of David Bowie criticizing MTV for not playing the works of black artists. So it took the enormous international success of Michael Jackson's Thriller album to break through that color wall. And then MTV had to play black artists, or it would just seem like,
Well, they pick and choose.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Wow.
So the blackballing of Janet, allegedly Mr. Moonves, was because she was not repentant enough.
Yes.
After the Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction. He said Justin Timberlake apologized and that was okay.
And evidently but he cried. Didn't feel, must have cried right, he, and begged.
Yeah. And okay, now think about this. You saw more, now that was 2004. You saw more skin in 2000 in prime time on Survivor. Remember Richard Hatch walking around naked? That was like, what the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction was nothing compared to that man walking around
in his new
pixelated.
And again, and the bottom line is, it was a nipple.
It was, and were you watching the Super Bowl that night?
Can I just tell you, I had fallen asleep earlier in the Super Bowl, right? And I managed to wake up right before the halftime show started. I don't know what it was. My body was like, you need to watch this. Something's going to happen. And I sat there and I watched it. And then when the moment came, it went to commercial and I sat there and I went, oh my God, was that her titty? And then I had to go rewind it because it was on the DVR.
It was almost like a flash frame. Yeah. It was so fast.
I was like,
and I was watching the Super Bowl. I've been watching for hours. I'm like one of the few gay men sitting up at Chelsea watching the Super Bowl. And it's February. Because I wanted to see Janet Jackson at halftime.
Yes.
I did not have my glasses on. And I'm watching the number, right? And then all of a sudden I watch and this brown thing pops out. And I'm thinking, okay, does that mean 6 more weeks of winter or an early spring? But it was like so fast. I thought, okay, that's going to be a nothing. But then it was all this drama.
It was everything. It was the only thing that they talked about. Because think of it this way, Bobby. Do we even know who was playing in the Super Bowl when that happened? No.
I can't remember.
But we remember that titty, though. How you doing?
You know, ask me, I don't know. It's like the Rams ambassador? I don't know. But we remember Janet Jackson.
That's it.
And it wasn't a naked titty. It wasn't a naked breast. It was covered up with stuff.
It had that sun ring thing around it, and then it had...
Yeah.
It had the leather piece that was supposed to be on top that popped off in the first place. You know.
Right. But Les Moonves reportedly did not think she was contrite enough and blackballed her career.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and again, why would she have to be contrite when she didn't do anything?
Yeah.
If you're watching what's going on, you know, no matter what, however it worked out, if it was planned that it was going to come out like that, if you know what I'm saying, like if it was going to, he knew that when he pulled the thing, it was on a Velcro moment, it was going to pop off, or it was really a legitimate accident. We don't really know. But needless to say, it was an accident. And so, you're going to have to err on the side that it was an accident. And so if it was an accident, what does she have to be contrite about?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like maybe the wardrobe person should be contrite about it. But not Janet Jackson, because she was wearing the outfit and the thing broke. You know what I'm saying? Or she was planning on showing her titty to the world, and guess what? It worked. But needless to say, people lost their ever-loving minds over a breast. Don't say nothing
A partially exposed breast.
You know,
after they gave Richard Hatch $1 million for walking around naked on Survivor.
And let's not forget NYPD Blue. How many times do we have to look at Dennis Farina's ass? You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I didn't mind that. Network. See, Dennis Farina, I did not mind that.
You're not supposed to like it, Bobby. I'm just I'm making it as a point.
Well, but I
but
totally
if you're
going to
see somebody naked,
did I ever tell you about the argument that I had with Les Moonves?
No.
All right.
Now, see, this. What are you holding out on? So, who gives a shit about Janet Jackson and all these other people? Ileana Douglas. I like her, but I don't care. This is about you.
Because
this is your podcast.
Mine was kind of like minor compared to theirs. But it was 2003. I can't remember if it was American Music Awards or Grammys or whatever, but there was a big music show in New York City. And a friend of mine who was a TV columnist called me up and she said, listen, want to be my date to it? And she said, Moonves might be there. I want to ask him a couple of questions about the new season and whatnot. I said, sure, I'd love to be your date. So at the time, I was a week-long guest on the Scott and Todd radio show, morning radio show on WPLJ,
right,
which is a radio station attached to CBS. All right. So my friend Michelle, the TV columnist, who was at the time on CNN a lot talking about TV, we're in the room, in the special press section, and in comes Les Moonves with a young lady who looks like she's wearing high heels for the first time in her life. And she looks absolutely charming, I have to say that. So he sees Michelle, shakes her hand. I extend my hand. I shake Les Moonves' hand, and I say, hi, Mr. Moonves, I'm Bobby Rivers, and I am covering this for WPLJ, Scott and Todd in the morning. That's what I said.
Right.
Les Moonves then says to the little crowd assembled there, oh, by the way, this isn't my girlfriend. It's my daughter. And she really wanted to see the show. And so I told the story on the air, immediately followed by Les Moonves obviously is a very proud dad because she was such a gracious, charming little lady who should have gotten an award herself for lighting up the room. That's what I said on the air.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, so I'm at WPLJ. A phone call comes in while we're in a commercial break. It's from Les Moonves' office, one of his minions. He wanted an apology from me on the air in the next segment.
For what?
For saying that he said, oh, by the way, this isn't my girlfriend, it's my daughter. Okay, now I said to the person on the phone, I said, but did you hear what I followed that with? I said, he's obviously a very proud dad, as well he should be, because she's charming, a gracious little lady who lit up the room and should have received an award herself for lighting up the room the day she did. One less Moonbed still wants an apology where you say, I went, okay, I'm not going to apologize. He wants an apology. And I said, all right, if I go on the air and I apologize, I'm going to say why he wants the apology. Mm-hmm. The audience will remember that I did nothing but compliment his daughter and his fatherhood. And I will also tell the audience that I introduced myself as Bobby Rivers, covering this for PLJ Radio, the Scott and Todd show, before he spoke. And I happened to be the only black person in the room. So maybe he didn't believe that I have radio and TV experience. They left me alone.
This bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what?
They left. And I thought, what a weird thing to call up and demand an apology about.
Well, see, now, Bobby, when you say that to me now, this will explain a lot with maybe your career. How do you not know that he did not come for you secretly all these years?
All right. Can I just say this?
What?
During my talk show, Pat Sajak was a fan of mine, and they were starting, and they had just given him a late-night talk show on CBS Late Night. But they put him up against Arsenio, so his show lasted not even an entire year. But I was a semi-regular on his show. So I would be out once a month, fly out to L.A. I'd do the Pat Sajak show, tape some stuff for VH1, and then head back to New York. So when my VH1 contract was up in 1990, I set my sights on being an entertainment contributor on CBS Sunday Morning. You know, because, well, I've been in the sort of, you know, the Viacom, CBS, VH1 family. And, you know, maybe they already know my stuff. Plus, I had done this stuff on CBS Late Night. I pitched myself. I called. I sent letters. I sent demo tapes through the 1990s. Never, ever, ever got a response. Ever. In 2000... I'm doing something. I'm doing a Lifetime TV show. I'm reviewing movies for an ABC News production, so it's a magazine show. And one day, when the show was over, one of the top producers, a woman, said, "You are so good. Listen, you should be doing features for CBS Sunday." And I said, "I'd love to." And she said, "Look, she mentioned a name. I'm not going to mention a name because one of the top executives there." She said, I'm going to be seeing him in a couple of days. Can I mention your name to him and have him contact you?" I said, "Yes, please." So the next week, when I went in to do my next segment for this ABC News show, the producer comes up and says, "How did it go?" And I said, "How did what go?" And she said, "Well, name of executive told me he contacted you and you talked." I never heard from the guy. I never heard from that guy. I didn't get a letter, email, nothing. I never heard from him, but I didn't want to put her in an awkward position, so I just said, "Thank you so much, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed."
And that man was Les Moonves.
It was an executive who worked with Moonves. But later, I thought, you know, this toxic boys club behavior, I started to wonder, I said, is that why I wasn't moving up in my career? Because, you know, if they're harassing women and they're looking at me and they're going, "All right, this man is about as straight as a slinky, but he does good work, but he's black." You know,
it's like, shit, if you were white, we could justify it.
Yeah, because, you know, and I don't mean this to be shady, because I would look at Mo Rocca's work and I think, damn, I was doing that before Mo was in TV.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. I mean, you know, it's like, at this point now, Bob, all we can do is just continue on the path of trying to do what we know is correct. And I just feel like at some point there's going to be a leveling, because, you know, these guys that are doing this are not going to be around for much longer if this is the way that they're behaving. And now that their behavior is being called out, so maybe, you know, we'll get some women that will be in the room that will say, like, oh, my God, these guys are hilarious. Why are we not dealing with them on this level? Because we've got X, Y, and Z that's like that. So why don't we look for something else that's a little different than something? You know, like, it's right. There's going to have to become a time when that's going to have to happen, because eventually you're going to, you know, there's only so much the Kardashians can save. You know what I'm saying?
Ain't that the truth?
You know, they can only save your networks only so hard, you know, and eventually they're going to lose their sabor, as they say in Spanish. You know what I mean? It's like, so.
I love it when you're bilingual.
Well, you know, it is Hispanic Heritage Month. It did begin today. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Tell Mango Mussolini that.
Well, he's going to have to hear it, because this Honduranian American is not going to take his crap anymore. Because, you know, like I said, it just affects me so when I see how this man has talked about Latinos. And it's just like, and no one seems, we can't seem to challenge him because everyone's afraid. And I'm like, all right, well, we got to do something. He's got to go.
Right. I don't know, we're digressing from Moonves, but Keith and I, with the nerve of him saying, no, but nearly 3,000 people didn't die because of Hurricane Maria.
You're making that up.
you're just saying that to make me look bad.
It's like, okay. I mean, not that we needed that, but okay. No. You still look bad. But it didn't have nothing to do with the other stuff. But all right, well, we'll go with you. We'll roll with it.
Listen, I want to add one more thing about Ileana Douglas. When I mentioned that, she's also a really great TV host. Mm-hmm. She's going to be hosting on Turner Classic Movies in October. I think presenting Screen Comedies. She is a terrific TV host and a film historian. You will love her if you get to see her on Turner Classic Movies. And she has a memoir out. This was out before the Les Moonves stories broke. Mm-hmm. The book is called I Blame Dennis Hopper. So Ileana Douglas, you know.
Come on, Mocha Ileana, girl.
They didn't treat you right years ago. They need to give you your own sitcom and let you write and direct it and star it now.
She should come talk to us, girl. We ain't got nothing better to do.
Come talk to us, girl.
Come hang out. Talk films with her. She'd love that. I mean, it would be fun. Oh, well.
Okay, now, Viola Davis. Did you read about this little kerfuffle that she caused? No, not really caused, but she was honest telling about a problem that she had with the movie The Help.
Yeah. I saw a little clip of the article, but I didn't get to go through the full thing.
Okay, because I just want to...
She's like, it's not about the crew or nothing. She just...
No, what? See, okay, here's the thing. Because she raised a very good point, which, if anything, stressed the need for diversity and inclusion, not just in front of the camera and on the movie set, but in the field of film journalism with the reviewers and the entertainment reporters. And she was, this was for the New York Times. One of the readers asked Viola Davis if she ever passed on a role and regretted it. And Viola's response was, almost a better question is, have I ever done roles that I've regretted? And I have. The Help is on that list. Now, in the statement, in what she said, in the first paragraph is high praise and love for the crew, the director, Tate, I forget his name right now, but it was high praise and love for the crew, the director, everybody involved in the experience. She loved the experience. What she had a problem with was that ultimately the story is not told through the voice of the Black women who the story was about.
Right.
Right. And she said, you don't hear the voice of the maids. It's the voice of the white girl who wrote the book.
Right. And rightfully so.
And rightfully so. And you know what? It was a very valid point. And I thought, because it's true, she, Octavia Spencer, mm-hmm. both knockout performances with their roles and trying to break beyond the tropes of what those kind of maid roles are, as they did. I'm sure a lot of Black people had problems with You is special. You is kind. You is blonde. You know, whatever that famous last line was that so many white folks loved. Mm-hmm. And I thought when I was reading what Viola Davis said, I immediately thought of a Whoopi Goldberg movie. One of Whoopi's best performances was in a 1990 movie called The Long Walk Home.
With Sissy Spacek.
Yes, 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 yes. Okay, and this movie, it's based on a real-life civil rights act. Martin Luther King's 1955 Montgomery bus boycott. And black women who were maids were soldiers in this boycott. The movie is about a married mother. You know, she's got a husband. She's got kids. She's a maid. And she works for this white woman, Sissy Spacek, who's also married and has kids, and her husband's a racist. So the Sissy Spacek character comes to understand the importance of this civil rights boycott and starts to side with the maid and break out of the limitations of what's expected from her as a Southern housewife. So the story is told it's like a memory story,
right?
Not all in flashback, but the voice is the grown daughter of the Sissy Spacek character.
Right.
Roger Ebert interviewed Whoopi, and Roger Ebert felt that the movie is very good, but it would have been more powerful to have the voice be the grown daughter of the maid. And Whoopi agreed. And I went, yeah, so I know where Viola Davis is coming from, because in the history of black films, that's what we've kind of fought for, to have our own narrative. And then when movies about us come out, we don't see any black people reviewing them because all the reviews are driven by a white male narrative. Okay, now, Scott Feinberg writes for The Hollywood Reporter. I've been reading his work for years, and I like his work. He's a good man. He interviews major stars. He's got a podcast. But he wrote something about Viola that I did not agree with. And here's what he wrote in a response to Viola, kind of regretting the help. He said, while Miss Davis is obviously free to say whatever she pleases, I suspect this comment, which she went out of her way to make, is deeply hurtful to the filmmaker who gave her the role in question, which is largely responsible for the career renaissance she has enjoyed since.
Okay, now, can I speak now? I've been sitting here listening because I've had a feeling of a particular way about this. That goes right in the line with Les Moonves and his comment about Janet Jackson that she wasn't contrite enough. Now, let's be very clear.
Oh, Lord.
First and foremost,
I just have to interject this. I felt the exact same thing.
Okay. First and foremost.
Yes, I felt the exact same thing.
First and foremost, Viola Davis, her come out moment was in that movie Doubt with Meryl Streep playing that black woman crying, and that snot bubble came. That was when her first marked moment had come out. And in that particular role, she was nobody's maid, as far as we knew. She probably was. It was 1960s. She's probably somebody's housekeeper. But that was not the point of that particular scene. When I look at what happened in The Help, and as much as I enjoyed watching The Help, I was like, yeah, it's another movie with a bunch of maids. And for her to say what she said, it was, she basically was saying that it's about the story itself. Why is that the story that this Feinberg person decides is the reason it's catapulting her career? Because she played a contrite maid. That's what you look at in her career and the things that she has done prior. What about her Broadway career? Doesn't that merit the conversation that that contributes to her? It ain't the fucking just that damn maid bullshit.
Take a simple second. Don't calm down. Keep the anchors because I'm going to talk about this. When I read, and like I said, I've read Scott Feinberg. He's a good young man. And I like his work on that one. I feel he was wrong. And you know what it's like? Remember the scene in Hidden Figures where the three women are sitting in the colored lunchroom?
Yes.
And they want to move up in their profession. And Kirsten Dunst comes in as the white supervisor
mm-hmm,
and tells them, oh, no, you're not allowed to take this test. And every time we try to get ahead.
Exactly. It's the same thing.
Right. And then the response is, y'all should realize how lucky you are to have a job.
Right. Have a job where we're serving you. Thanks. That's exciting.
And that's the attitude of that I got from Scott Feinberg's response.
Like, how dare you?
Because Viola Davis has been, she has Broadway, TV, and film credits. She has been making movies since 1996. And 2 years before Doubt, she was in a movie. She stole the movie in a bit part. She didn't even have a name. She was Mother in Hospital in the movie World Trade Center.
Okay.
Mother in Hospital. Right. So that's how it is. Okay. Now, about this career renaissance, when Viola Davis got her second Oscar nomination, and that was for The Help, she and Whoopi Goldberg then became the two most Oscar-nominated black women in Oscar history, with two nominations.
Two nominations. And this idiot is talking about...
And right. So Marissa Tomei has more. So two nominations. All right. After The Help, when she was nominated for Best Actress, Viola Davis had to go to TV, like many other women of color who've gotten an Oscar nomination or even won the Oscar, because Hollywood had no other scripts for them.
Certainly not ready.
She had to go to TV. If she had a renaissance, it was not because of The Help of getting an Oscar nomination. It was because Meryl Streep kept praising her.
Yes.
You and I talked about that.
Yes.
A lot of times it's not your representation if you're a black person. It's like having that white person who is a fan of yours and gives you some public love.
That in this particular industry, that is going to be the thing. And it's, again, it is what I say about having that ally. It's, you know, it's not necessarily, it's not, as you talk about Octavia Spencer, wasn't right. that the movie that she just, her and the young woman from The Help, that they were doing a movie together, and she said that they were not making enough money.
Yes, right, yeah, I know who you mean.
And they wound up giving Octavia what she deserved. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, right. It does not happen in any of these industries. It doesn't happen in any actual part of life, you know, when people actually work together. It's like, it's not that hard. Meryl Streep's a brilliant actress. Viola Davis is a brilliant actress. Why wouldn't Meryl Streep say that Viola Davis is a brilliant actress? What is it killing her? It ain't killing her to do that. But man, the minute that she does say it, all of a sudden, you know, that
all Viola, of a sudden, right.
Viola Davis is a very interesting actress.
When Meryl Streep says, oh, Viola's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, I want to be there
I'm
and speak.
I'm going to be there.
Bam!
Because, you know, she's responsible for that. But from the place
And when
of,
Jessica Chastain says, oh no, Octavia needs to be getting the same money I'm getting,
exactly.
Bam!
You know what I'm saying? So... And this is how Hollywood would rather treat it. And now you say that's the producers trying to save a buck. That, you know what I'm saying? But they're willing to try to save a buck when it comes to giving a person like Viola Davis or Octavia Spencer their due. But they will move heaven and earth for Nicole Kidman. If she decides she wants to do something, they'll stop the planet coal for Meryl Streep, which they should.
Yes.
Do not. I am not coming for Meryl Streep.
Do not. Right.
Before anybody writes anything, I loves me some Meryl Streep. If we could do Meryl Streep like how, what's his name did in that movie with, Jesus Christ.
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder.
Are you thinking about Tropic Thunder? I knew you were going to say that.
Thank you.
If we could have done that to Meryl and had her
I mean,
do
Tracy Ullman has already perfected it too, but I'm just saying, you know.
But this is, you know what? Hollywood is like this. You go in for a pitch meeting with Hollywood. He said, okay, we want to do a biopic on Harriet Tubman. No. Okay, what about a biopic on opera singer, civil rights activist, Marian Anderson?
No.
Well, what about, Bessie Coleman, the first black woman to become an American pilot with a license? No. Dinah Washington? No. Shirley Chisholm?
Nope.
No. Lorraine Hansberry, playwright, screenplay writer, and out lesbian?
I don't know.
No. What else you got? Well, I got a screenplay about a white lady who created a mop and sold it on Home Shopping Network. Perfect! Let's do that for Jennifer Lawrence!
You know, I love Jennifer Lawrence and everything she does. Her movies are the most insane. I'm just saying. You're like, that's what they're saying. But
think about this, and nothing against her talent, because she is talented.
Yes.
But the comparison, Jennifer Lawrence never has to worry about another script because her mailbox is stuffed with scripts.
Exactly.
She didn't have to go to TV. She's still in her 20s. She's got 4 Oscar nominations to her credit. She's got 1 Oscar on her mantelpiece. And she's one of the highest paid actresses in Hollywood. Viola now has 3 Oscar nominations, 1 Oscar on her mantelpiece. She had to go to TV.
Don't forget her Tonys. Do not forget her Tonys.
And the Tonys. And she had to go to TV after The Help because Hollywood had no scripts for her.
They had nothing for her.
Nothing for her. And the same thing with Cicely Tyson, Diane Carroll, yep. Rita Moreno, Alfre Woodard, Angela Bassett.
Yep, they're all doing TV.
So this career renaissance, and you know what? And I also thought about this. Scott Feinberg will moderate panels. He gets big stars for interviews, and I thought about this. If he was, if there was a panel of film critics at the Paley Center, and he was with some Black and Latino critics, and they started talking about Viola Davis and The Help, would he have said that on stage with people of color as critics and with people of color in the audience?
Well, girl, no, he wouldn't have. It's like, to quote Cedric the Entertainer, we'd have had a case of, I wish a motherfucker would. Say something about Viola. Go ahead. You open your mouth, white man. Do it. Do it. I swear to God, I will put my foot up, yo. Don't you be talking about Viola.
And that is my point.
That's why they don't want us up on the stage. They want to get up there and say all that stupid foolishness and they think they're going to get away with it. That's why they don't want us there. Going to let stuff go unchecked. Oh, no, we will not.
Oh, no. And that is why we need more Black voices in the field of film journalism so we can break it down to you privileged folks help you to understand.
Well, you know, no tea, no shade. It's just information. However, you know, I think in the end, like I said, he would certainly not have been bold enough to say, well, I think that she should have been grateful for that. Not in front of no room full of Black people. Honey. It would have been the quickest interview session. It would have been like, oh, really? She should be grateful.
I would have taken off my imaginary earrings. I would have told you to hold my purse, and I'd have gone up there. Slapped the taste out of his mouth.
He just like Cedric said, I wish a motherfucker was. He said, what? This mother father.
And you know what? And that would have been that would have been a clip that would have been on the news.
Of course, us showing up.
Somebody saying, all of a sudden, the guy who used to be on VH1 turned into Aunt Esther from Santa Monica and said, went up on stage. And we think he was choking that poor white man that works for the Hollywood Reporter.
Dead. Choking him dead. I mean, but honestly, though, all jokes aside, I find it always fascinating when that's the quickest assessment that he can come up with. She should have been thankful for the help. It's like, so Hattie McDaniel had to be thankful for Gone with the Wind because, well, you know what? That was the only kind of role people were going to let her have anyway. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So the fact that she won an Oscar for basically playing that same role, got nominated for an Oscar for playing that role, says a lot about what he thinks is really great in her career. It's like, if that was the movie that you waited for to discover her, where were you with Doubt? Because that was before that movie. Where were you when she was on stage in that play?
Doing
August Wilson Fences and Carrying On. Where were you? Where were you? Because I knew about that. It's like, you know what I'm saying? And most Black journalists who cover entertainment that would be covering someone like a Viola Davis, if they're of a certain age, let me add that in there as well. If they are of a certain age, they would know all of that information.
Exactly. You know? this.
And he should know all of that information because that is his beat. We have to know that information just because we have to know that information. But we also have to know that in 1970, that's when Lauren Bacall won the Tony for Applause. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, we kind of have to know all of that.
We have to know all of that.
And no tea, no shade. I'm glad that that my mind is hopefully holding as much of that in. But at the same time, it's like, you know, dude, you really did step out your face. That's what he did.
Oh.
That sounds like to me a classic case of white entitlement, not recognizing that he's espousing white entitlement. She should be thankful for that role, and not and again, thankful for a role in which she plays a maid. Like, he doesn't even go beyond what it is that is being said about the context of what she should be grateful
for. Of the story,
for.
Right. Like, really? And the other thing, too, is, and like I said, he's basically a good guy, where he's got this position with the Hollywood Reporter. He's got his column. He's got his podcast. Big stars do his podcast. And he will moderate panels, you know, when he gets the kind of work that we men of color wish we could get. We would love to moderate a panel like that. We would love to have big stars on our podcast. We'd love to have a column in the Hollywood Reporter. But we're not that lucky. We don't have those privileges.
What's so interesting, just even in the realm of the stuff that I've been doing with the theater, I've gone to several shows now, especially with the afternoon matinees, that they do these talkbacks, right? And so it's usually done by either the producer or like the director or someone. And so I've been going to a lot of shows and seeing that they've been having talkbacks that they're going to be doing over the thing. And so I contacted a couple of the producers for some of the shows that I actually really like. And I said to them, it's like, I would love to do a talkback, right? They won't even return the email, some of them. Others have said, well, you know, we only like to do the talkbacks ourselves. We have such an arrangement. And I said, well, if you've noticed, I haven't even asked about money, first of all. Let's just even go there. It's like, but some of these were people who I have done interviews for, like for this one last particular show that I was talking about. One of the interviews that I've done, if you've heard it, is for this particular show. And I was all about it and been all about the stars. I know about all the people in the show. It's like, why wouldn't you let me do that? So then I'm reading later on, you know, in the trades, as one does. This note comes from some other publicist that I know that says that someone who I know who is doing a podcast as well that's based in theater, I'm not going to give that person a name because I don't want to come across as being shady, but that person, they just announced that someone's going to take them for doing a talkback with someone else. And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay.
Okay, I just exhaled like that because I pitched myself for doing the same kind of work for film, for movies that were opening. Could not. I had a talk show, interviewed most of these people.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, you go to my Facebook page, you go to the thing, half of the theater people, you know, there they are. My saddest, like, you know, because we just had the passing of Maren Mazie this week. And, you know, she was one of those people who I was very lucky enough to have a chance to interview her and her husband. And she was nothing but kind to me. And it was so wonderful. And I just kept thinking as I was looking at all of the tributes and stuff, it's like, I would love to say something wonderful like that to her as a journalist who's been able to cover a few things that she's been in, as well as her husband.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if you could?
But, you know, what do I know, right?
Yeah, but Maren Mazie,
when
Channel 13 would have pledge drives,
and
a couple of times they had me as a guest host. Two of the most wonderful people that I was ever on with, they were, you know, when you're one way in the green room and then you're still that same way when you're on the stage,
yes,
that same warmth, you That's go, them. Oh, you are living gold. One was Gary Beach and then Maren.
Yeah.
Maren was on and she was just wonderful. She was so warm and so gracious and just so huggable. And she was fabulous.
Right.
It Kissed Me, Kate.
I loved her.
Oh, my God. She was wonderful.
Loved. But you know what I'm saying? You know, like, but you know, you and I can talk about that. Like the way we're talking about that.
There you go. But do they hire us?
But do they hire
no.
us? Or do they feign interest in wanting to hear it? Because, again, you know, I just saw something of where a place that I formerly was working, and I saw that they're planning on having an interview series. And they're going to have somebody really famous do the interview series, which, I, you know, makes sense in terms of money, progress, whatever you want to do. And I just sat there and I thought, and you guys are going to spend a whole lot more money on that when you can spend money on me and probably get a better show because I actually want to do it.
What? Don't get me started.
You know, but what do I know? What do we
but
know?
But we move along. What do we know?
We just
move on. Listen. Comedian actor Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey has a new show. It's on Showtime. It's called Kidding.
Yes.
And it's a drama. I watched the first episode. I read a couple of reviews that said this is some of the best work he's done in years. And I have to say, I agree. Mm-hmm. And just to quickly, the plot is he's a beloved children's show host on an educational show, very much like Mr. Rogers, like Fred Rogers. Uh-huh. He's just beloved. He experiences a devastating tragedy in his personal life. With his broken heart, he is trying to figure out how to get on with his life and also how to take this pain and put it into his art in a way that's positive and relate the experience to the audience to make it a lesson. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. The first episode, I thought, man, his acting was so good. As for the writing, I gave him an A and the writing a C+. Because the writing, you ever see these shows where they're trying to be too edgy and it just gets in the way?
Yeah.
And his performance is so good and so sincere and heartfelt, it drives the show. But then you've got, I'll put it like this, the writing, it's like, oh, let's be edgy. Let's have somebody keep saying vagina.
Yes.
I know for some reason that is now the word for edginess, vagina. And let's have high school kids act like jaded middle-aged people.
Yeah.
So hopefully that changes. But some episodes are directed by Michel Gondry, as was the opening episode. That is the man who directed him in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So if you're a Jim Carrey fan and want to see him exercise his dramatic chops, watch Kidding on Showtime. He's very good. I like to see where it goes. And hopefully the writers will settle down and just let his depth drive series.
Well, you know, the thing is, the Jim Carrey right now is having a wonderful resurgence because, you know, he's one of the writers and producers on that show, I'm Up Here, or I'm Dying Up Here, which is also on show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
That's
his
baby as well. And, you know, that's kind of like reliving the 70s, late 70s with comedy during the days of the Comedy Store and Mitzi Gaynor.
Mitzi Shore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pauly Shore's auntie. But I mean, it was like Mitzi Gaynor. But who was she? By the way, just passed away recently too.
Mitzi Shore.
Yeah, but
Mitzi Shore. Yeah.
But he has captured some of the angst of comics of that period, and it's been kind of interesting because it's more of like a fictitious retelling of the story of the period. And so, and there's a lot of really interesting dramatic work that's in that piece. I'm waiting to see if he's going to make a cameo at some point because.
Yeah, I like him, but it goes dramatic.
It's just that good. I mean, and he's giving you, that show is giving you that other piece of him, that dramatic side that we keep seeing as of late. So.
He was dramatic. I've mentioned this before. I really liked him in this movie that I don't think the film company knew what to do with. I Love You, Philip Morris.
Yes.
Now, this it was at film festivals in January 2009, and then they never released it. 2 years later, Ewan McGregor, who was Carrey's co-star in that movie, was on Good Morning America. George Stephanopoulos asked him, is I Love You, Philip Morris ever going to be released? And Ewan McGregor didn't know. I never saw it playing at a Cineplex in New York City. Mm-hmm. When I saw it, it was on DVD. Yeah. And just to quickly capsulize the movie for you, it's based on a true story, and it's sort of a little jab at the, I'll say, intellectualism of the George W. Bush administration in the scenes that take place in Texas. Carrey, and it opens with, he's a married man. He's got a wife. He's got a little girl. He's a cop in Virginia Beach. He goes to church. He's on the choir, has sex with his wife. But he realizes, oh, I'm really gay. Gay, 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 gay.
And he just
And he has an accident, which, you know, he could have been killed, and then he decides, I'm going to really live my life. So he gets a divorce, goes to Miami, gets a hot boyfriend, Rodrigo Santoro, and then he comes to this realization that we all come to, being gay is expensive. So he becomes a con man to try to keep the boyfriend looking good, you know, and he's like a master con man. Well, there are a couple of things that are different about this gay image. He is the tough guy. He's never the victim. He's often the smartest one in the room. And he and the wife remain friends after he gets a divorce.
Right.
Because she knows that what's driving him is there was this pain, this lie, this desertion that happened in his childhood that just put a hole in his heart he's still trying to fill. But in the movie, he is just openly gay. He loves being gay, and when he gets sent to prison, he meets the love of his life, who is Philip Morris. And these two are having a healthy sex life, and I never thought that I would see a romantic prison scene with two men and Johnny Mathis singing Chances Are in the background.
But it was the like thing it was 1948
that holds you, all over again. Right. He gives you a little bit of liar, liar, but at no time is he trying to be funny, or does he go into, I'm going to give him some Jim Carrey-like ad libs or physical shtick. Mm-hmm. He remains committed to the heartbreak and the truth of the character, which really makes it interesting to watch. I don't think they knew how to market the movie because he was gay, but not the victim.
Right. If he'd have been gay, yeah, and died of AIDS, they'd have loved him.
Exactly. Or if he had been, you know, not being shady, like a, you know, Carson Kressley or Will and Grace type character.
Oh my God, yeah. That.
But he's like one of the tough guys in prison.
Yeah, which is even better. It's kind of like the same thing. And it feels like we're having like a Showtime moment, but that the new season of Shameless just started as well. And they are not afraid of the gay, honey. Trust me. That's the show. That show is fabulous.
Did you ever see the original? I think it was Australian or British.
British version. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, and they were not afraid to just be all about how terrible this father is. He's a terrible,
father.
And they just go there. And so this show is, I mean, you know, bravo. I love me some Jim Carrey when they show him, when he gets to do work that he loves, because you can tell that he loves this. He was talking about the show on Bill Maher, and he was just so impassioned about what he's doing with this work and how he's living his life now as an artist, which I think is awesome.
And you know, as well he should be. It's some fine, 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 fine work. Well, we covered a lot of ground here. We got Ileana Douglas, Viola Davis, Les Moonves, and there are a lot of women, and that's what they want to see. Les Moonves.
I am Julie Chen Moonves. Yes, you are, darling.
Yes, you are. But it's not like this is Mrs. Norman Maine.
Exactly.
Well, I'm ready for a cocktail.
Hey, Lady Gaga.
Hey, Lady Gaga. Yes, if you know, I have to see that. I have to talk about it. I'm ready for a cocktail. And, oh, Lord, Mr. Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter is probably going to send a posse after me.
Well, you know what? You let him find me, because I got something for him. I ain't afraid of him. Like, you don't worry about what Viola needs to be grateful for. You need to be grateful that Viola ain't going to kick your behind. That's what he needs to be grateful for. See, I'm mad again, Bobby. Give me a drink.
There you go. Okay, don't be mad. Listen, folks, keep in mind that Keith Price and I are available for work. And we absolutely give you our deepest, most sincerest gratitude for listening to Mocha.
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter at Bobby Rivers TV. Bobby Rivers TV, I've got a Facebook page too. And Keith, tell them about your podcast and where they can find you.
They can find everything now. I've streamlined down to keithpricecomic.com. So you can go there and find everything, all the podcasts, all the stuff. You can find our links to Mocha on there. You can find the links to everything that we're doing. So, yay!
Yay! So, and the reminder, Jim Carrey's show is on Showtime. It's called Kidding.
Yes.
Viola Davis has a new movie coming out called Widows, directed by Steve McQueen, who gave us 12 Years a Slave. And Ileana Douglas is going to be a host on Turner Classic Movies next month in October. And her book is called I Blame Dennis Hopper. So there you have it. Thank you, folks.
Mocha.